Good Monday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. All brought to you by DraftKings, live from Bar Canada here at The D in downtown Las Vegas. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Midland, producer number nine. So much more than a producer here on a numbers game. What's happening?
Not much, man. Not much. Just playing Name That Song before the show.
Yeah, with Matt in the background giving you all the answers.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Let's go, Kansas.
I don't know if you know this. National championship game tonight.
Let's go.
UConn and Purdue. Huskies favored by a touchdown in this one. We'll get into all of that with Dr. Bob. One final appearance from Dr. Bob this college basketball season. He kind of nailed UConn, Alabama. He's like, I got UConn against the spread. But if there was an underdog this past weekend in the Final Four, meaning either Alabama or NC State, which is the one that is the most likely to pull off the outright, it would be Bama. And somehow I think he threaded that needle perfectly based on what we saw on Saturday. He will give his thoughts on the championship game tonight, as will Mike Somich from The Handle here at VSiN, big college basketball head. We'll get their thoughts. We'll also talk baseball with Paul Spohr, hockey with Jay Kahn, as is our tradition here on Mondays on a numbers game. Before we get to the national title game tonight and a look back at Saturday and even a talk about the women's game, I just want to say this because whenever you're turning on any mainstream media or anything this morning, all you're hearing about is John Calipari. And John Calipari, in case you missed it, is signing a 5-year deal at Arkansas. Now, Kelly, people are talking about this with the gravitas of, you were in school and they were like, hey, what was the event that started World War One? And they're like, oh, the assassination of the Archduke Ferdinand in Austria, of course. Or from a sports perspective, Dante Culpepper going to the Dolphins is what created Nick Saban's 7 championships at Alabama. Okay, so people are like, the way that they're talking about this is, okay, Rob Lanier gets fired at SMU. Andy Enright goes from USC to SMU. Eric Musselman goes from Arkansas to USC, and now here we have this seismic thing of John Calipari going to Arkansas, which, you know, from a legacy standpoint is a little odd, right, that he would go from Kentucky to Arkansas, but in today's day and age and the way that things soured at Kentucky, you get it. But good God, the betting perspectives are not enough for me to make too much of it. So I want to talk about it here at the outset, then I don't want to talk about it again because I think it's just getting way too much juice this morning. But listen, when you're at Kentucky and you 3 out of the last 4 years go 9-16, that was a pandemic year. So we kind of let that slide, right? But then 2 out of the last 3, you lose to a 15 seed St. Peter's, and this year you lose to a 14 seed in Oakland. Yeah, it's probably, you're probably on the outs and you're at odds with alumni, boosters, with everybody. From a betting perspective, what does this mean? Let's say, Does it make you want to bet Arkansas to win the national title next year? It does not me, because even though the NIL money will flow now with the Walton family, with the Tyson family, with Jared Jones at Arkansas, John Calipari has exhibited no ability yet. He may learn, but to date, he is still in this one-and-done frame of mind. And he can talk about, or they can say in theory, well, now he's got all the NIL. He's got all this money that he can use for NIL. He ain't Nate Oates. And, again, for those of us who had Nate Oates and Alabama futures, which, again, for the last 2 weeks I've said I had no thought that it would ever really get home because of the behemoth that was UConn. But the point of the Nate Oates bets was this dude got it. Not only did he show coaching prowess when he had the Brandon Millers of the world, but in the transfer portal, right? Forget the fact that he had a 5-star. He did get 1 5-star in Jaren Stevenson. But in the transfer portal, he was able to get Grant Nelson. He got Latrell Reitzel. He got Aaron Estrada. He got these pieces in volume where you're like, this dude totally gets that the object of college basketball is to be old and stay old now. It is not about one and done, which Calipari has made his hay on. It got him 1 championship at Kentucky some years ago, 1 championship in 15 years. But that ain't the way that it goes in college basketball. So I don't know that it should induce a bet on Arkansas for you. Maybe you feel otherwise. Doesn't for me. The other side of it is, okay, if we see some markets about who's Kentucky's next coach, which is not really everywhere, but if that market would be available to you, It's all the suspects that everybody else is saying. I have nothing to add. Oates being one of them. And by the way, just personally, because I have known one kid since the age of 8 who actually just went transfer portal into Alabama. By the way, when I'm talking about NIL, I'm talking about transfer portal as a commingled thing.
Right.
So I'm a little bit of a panic this morning that Oates would leave to go to Kentucky. I don't think he will, but people are saying it's $18 million buyout. If you really want someone bad enough, these schools have $18 million to pay.
Sure.
But I hope that Oates recognizes that what he's doing at Alabama is every bit as valid as what he could do at Kentucky, and he needs to stay there. Plus, the whole thing about less pressure at a school like Arkansas than there is at a basketball-focused school like Kentucky is. The other one, Danny Hurley, who is, again, on the cusp. If UConn gets it done tonight of a second consecutive championship, he'll probably get a call. Jay Wright will probably get a call. Jay Wright's 62. I don't know why Jay Wright would want to come back. Maybe he would, maybe he wouldn't. The price will matter, of course, with all of this. Rick Pitino was a name bandied about last night, but he's 71 years old. You probably don't want to return to Pitino at 71 years old. You're an NBA guy. The most intriguing name is Billy Donovan to me. Billy Donovan, who has sort of, I don't want to say floundered in Chicago, but they're not really going anywhere in Chicago. And he's the guy who won the last back-to-back titles in the NCAA at Florida.
I do think times have changed, though, right? I mean, I think for so many of these coaching conversations, it is about understanding that new landscape of how to best utilize the transfer portal and NIL and being, I mean, Calipari is like maybe the best example of, hey, we capitalized on the one and done system, but the system's changed and moved on. So it's, I don't know if Billy Donovan would be a great coach in college basketball right now. I think it's very understandable why a lot of these college guys, and we've seen it so much with football, are looking towards the pros because they don't want to mess around with this crazy recruiting landscape anymore.
Yeah, right, Chris Beard, Scott Drew, all kinds of names being bandied about. Anyway, from a betting standpoint, it really doesn't move the needle for me either way. Tonight's game, of course, ought to be the headline. UConn, again, 7-point favorites against Purdue. The Purdue-NC State game on Saturday in the Final Four was just dreadful from just a viewing standpoint. Purdue wasn't very good. It didn't have to be, though they get credit for doing all that they had to not only win but cover against the Wolfpack. The Wolfpack were just not at their best. The Cinderella story comes to an end, and Purdue deserves credit. I'm not trying to take credit away, but you understand it was not a classic. They did what they had to do. The second game was fascinating in that Alabama, I think Dr. Bob called it perfectly, right? UConn somehow gets the cover in the end, but for 28 minutes of that ball game, Alabama was in it. It was 56-56 with just over 12 minutes left before UConn finally separated for good. They went, 90 seconds later, they were up 8. It never got closer than 6 after that. By the way, that was the thing about the NC State game. You know, in retrospect, I don't want to just sort of dismiss it as how I characterized it, because there was a point in that NC State game, and this will get lost in history. It was 39-33 Purdue early in the second half, and NC State had exactly 4 different possessions where they could have cut into that 6-point lead, and 4 shots that did not go in. And they could never get closer than that. But there was a moment in that game where Purdue, who hadn't played well, was super vulnerable. NC State had all the opportunities in the world to not only cut into the lead, but actually take the lead. Cut into the lead, but actually take it. And that didn't happen. And the Alabama thing was, I said last week, and again, holding the Alabama ticket, I've got this 60-1 on them, which I got in June because of all the Nate Oates offseason stuff. Never thought they could be. The thing that you couldn't have counted on was the behemoth and the Goliath that was UConn. But I said for Alabama, I'm pretty sure I said this on air, certainly all, Alabama had to go Villanova 1985 percentage-wise against Georgetown, but they had to do it from 3. So in the first half, they go 8 of 11. They do exactly that, and they're still down.
It's incredible.
It's unbelievable how good UConn is.
I mean, I think it's one of those, like, when you looked at the box score afterward, you're like, well, like, you just look at the box score. You could be like, well, I am at Alabama. Like, that's everything they would have wanted to do. And then you look down at the UConn section, and you're like, Well, okay, UConn did just as well at everything Alabama was wanted to do. And then you look at things like assists and rebounds, and they out-rebound them 37-29, out-assisted them 20-9. Just wild what UConn's doing right now.
We're going to get Dr. Bob's thoughts on the game tonight and Mike Somich's, but I will tell you that pre-flop, I'm not getting in front of UConn. I know a lot of people think, I thought NC State was getting too many points. I thought Alabama was getting too many points. I do not think Purdue is getting too many points.
Okay.
Maybe I'm 0 for 3. Maybe Purdue does cover. Maybe Purdue has a shot at winning this outright. I just don't see it that way. I just think this UConn team is, we didn't think of them midway through this season as this juggernaut, but here we are. And this team is just, they have all the answers. We'll talk about most outstanding player here on the other side and what the betting implications are of that heading into tonight's game. But I just think I am more excited for this game, Kelly, just from a fan's perspective, because you have an actual traditional matchup of big men. Oh, in Zach Edey, you have this unbelievable offensive force. And in Donovan Klingon, you have this unbelievable defensive force. Big men. It's a throwback to actual big man versus big man. And then everybody else, really good too, in terms of the complementary parts. But what a traditional look this game will have to what we remember from yesteryear. So with apologies to Houston and the Jamal Shedd injury, these are certainly two teams that perhaps were on a collision course the whole time. Can't wait. We'll talk more about most outstanding player. Numbers game, Visa.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
For a limited time, we're offering 2 weeks of our exclusive betting splits for free. Just sign up at VSiN.com/splits. That's VSiN.com/splits. The VSiN betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 5 minutes, so you can see changes in all the action. Find out where the public is betting based on the number of tickets and where the money does not match the public opinion. You can check out not just today's action, but future events as well. Take advantage of this limited time offer, though it is limited. Visit VSiN.com/splits now to claim your free 2-week access to VSiN's betting splits. Don't strike out on potential winnings. Visit VSiN.com/splits and start making smarter baseball bets today. Start making smarter bets in every sport today, for God's sake. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin live from Barcanada, the barrage at the D in downtown Las Vegas. I got a great text. We were just talking moments ago about, I am old enough to remember when they played a consolation game, a game for third place in the NCAAs. And I had to look this up. The last one was in 1981. Kelly, who could forget that Virginia beat LSU for the third place game in 1981? Who could forget?
I'm sure there was a lot of effort given on both sides.
Well, so it's funny you mention this. So I bring up the third place game, or the consolation game, as we used to call it. And Steve Fezzik has just texted me. He goes, listen, if they play tonight, NC State and Alabama, I've got the over in your fictitious third place game. NC State just played their 10th straight elimination game. They will run with Bama. So there you go. There's your betting advice for a game that's not going to happen.
That's not going to happen. Yeah, but like an NBA All-Star.
But I understand his thinking. Nobody's going to play defense in this game. You gotta try to assess motivation. By the way, women's title. We've gone 30 minutes. We haven't even mentioned it. Congratulations, Dawn Staley and the South Carolina Gamecocks. They complete their undefeated season with a title. Dawn Staley in South Carolina is third. 38-0, 74-1 the last two seasons, 109-3. The last three seasons. And of course, they beat Caitlin Clark in Iowa, who loses in the championship game for a second straight year. But Caitlin Clark, as Dawn Staley even mentioned in her post-game thoughts, really carried a lot and really brought a lot of people into the women's college basketball tent. Paul Sporer joins us to talk baseball from Fangraphs. But Paul, you were saying off air, like, that's the case for you too with women's basketball. Comes to us courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line.
Absolutely. You know, I'm a Longhorn, so I follow my Lady Horns a bit here and there, you know, when the tournament time comes around, but was never really heavy into the women's game. Caitlin got me in, you know, started watching late last year with the tournament, and she's just so dynamic. And then you learn that there's tons of great talent, and that South Carolina team cannot be slept on. They're an absolute powerhouse, and they're not slowing down, by the way. They got Pow Pow coming back for a fifth year. Yeah. They're going to lose Cardosa, but they're bringing in an elite recruit as well. they're insane. So they're going to be, you know, untouchable again. Caitlin probably going to be she's going to be the number one pick in the WNBA draft. But yeah, there's just so much talent. I think that's really what you learn when you do sit down. If she brings you in, then you realize, wow, there's a lot of exciting talent in the women's game. And I really did enjoy it. This was the first year that I was like really into it, knowing more than just a couple stars. I was knowing different players across many teams, and very enjoyable watch.
If you bring Paul Spohr into the women's college basketball tent, this is a perfect example, because all Paul does is watch baseball and beat 12-year-olds in MLB The Show from across the world. That's all he does.
No, they beat me.
Oh, sorry. They beat you.
No. The kids dominate an old man like myself. I am ancient in MLB The Show universe at this point.
Sorry to have mischaracterized it, Paul.
That's right.
Okay. I was going to ask you this anyway, but Forrest Lehman does it by tweet, so I'll go to his tweet. Was Tommy John ever this relevant as a player? We got to ask you about this. By the way, the Tommy Lasorda joke was, thank God that Billy Grabarkowitz didn't hurt his arm, because then we'd be talking about Billy Grabarkowitz surgery for the rest of time.
What? I know who that is.
Yeah, me too. I think I had a baseball card of his. But this is really bad. Like, here we have Spencer Strider, where it hasn't been confirmed yet, but it appears as though Spencer Strider may have to have Tommy John surgery. He had Tommy John surgery when he was at Clemson in 2019. We already found out about Shane Bieber. He's going to have TJ. Is it the pitch clock, Paul? Do you buy that that's what's doing it?
No, it's not the pitch clock. I'm not even sure that the pitch clock is necessarily exacerbating it. We're always looking for a single smoking gun. And it's never really just one thing. But if it is going to be one thing, it's the velocity. This isn't new. The pitch clock didn't just bring in this era. It's a convenient scapegoat because fatigued pitchers do, you know, pitch worse and will get hurt more. And so by lowering the pitch clock, you are creating more fatigue, which can breed more injuries. But I don't think the data is there to suggest that this is the reason behind it. It is the velo with which players throw with. And it's very clear that the innings management things that we're trying aren't doing anything. So frankly, I think you should just be using a player's bullets when he's got them. You know, when a guy shows that he's ready to go, use him. Now, I'm not saying running him into the ground and be irresponsible and just, you know, let guys throw a buck 30, 130 pitches every outing. But enough with the babying stuff of like 60 innings this year and then 90. That's not working. Let guys throw when they're healthy. And if they break, they're going to break. You cannot prevent the breakage is the point. So, and I think we're just seeing that because of the velocity. So unless there's a change there, and I think the only real change you could do, you can't tell them to throw slower. That's not going to happen because that's where the money is. You get money based off of being able to throw hard, would be to move the mound back a little bit. Not feet. I'm talking inches to start. But obviously that would start to curb velocity. I think that's really the only way we're going to see the velocity start to slow, though.
Stefania Bell may have had the most salient sort of explanation. She goes, it's a multifactorial problem, max effort, max velocity, overuse, early specialization, and more throwers seem to be training towards metrics like spin rate, et cetera, versus functionality. Bottom line, pitching demands, and I think this is what I said last week, which is I just said humans aren't intended to throw this fast. She said pitching demands exceed biology, which is her way of saying what I did, which is I think that's it, right? And Ozzie Guillen's old school line is, fat doesn't get pulled, right? So he was like talking about the players of yesteryear. The reason they didn't have these injuries because they weren't as tightly wound of an athletic specimen was his very layman sort of explanation.
Absolutely. And like there is something to that. And, you know, people wonder, well, why were the guys able to throw so many innings back then? Because they were downshifting and then upshifting for a tough batter and kind of getting through. It's not that they were better or tougher or anything like that. It was a completely different game. They weren't asked to empty the tank at full bore for as many pitches as you can. That's what we ask of our pitchers today. If we were still playing the way we did back in the day, then your top pitchers of today would be going 300 innings. You don't think Corbin Burns could pitch like the guys of yesteryear, but even do it at a better clip? Of course he could. But the MLB way is full bore from pitch one, whether you're facing the one hitter or the nine hitter. There's just not really any sort of management and downshifting because everyone can go bridge on you. That's the thing. Everyone can go yard. There aren't as many weak spots. Obviously, there's weaker hitters than versus the studs, but not nearly to the degree that we would see back in the day where some guys were purely in there for defense and they couldn't hit to save their lives. That's an easy out. That's two pitches. Then you go hard against, you know, Reggie Jackson when he comes up. So different game, but Stefania does nail it. It is multifactorial. The velo is the biggest change, though. That's the biggest thing, is that guys are just throwing harder and harder. And at such a young age, that the breakage is just part of it. I mean, you got some psychotic parents out there wanting their kids to get TJ so that they can throw, you know, thinking that they can throw harder. Yeah, it's insane.
I remember Jesse Foppert, who used to play for the Giants, lived down the hallway from me in San Francisco, and he became a pitching tutor. And he used to say the parents were the worst. Like the parents.
There's no doubt.
Yeah. He said the parents were just the worst.
They're a big part of it. Yeah. Going to the specialization piece. I know we're moving on from this, but like that's a big part of it too, is that they're going to push these kids to go year round. Every player talks about play multiple sports. Don't go too crazy with this. The parents don't allow it.
Real quick, one word answer. Does it make you not want to bet Cy Young futures this early? In other words, at least if you're going to bet a Cy Young future, make the run up, the ramp as short as you can so as not to have to dodge these Tommy John surgeries.
No, but it's why I'll go with a long shot. I know that's not one word, but that's why I'll go with a long shot, because the injuries are going to probably break the top guys at some point anyway.
I say, so in other words, don't ever just choose a shorter shot because it's already a bad deal. Don't make it even, you know.
Not in March. I'm not taking Strider. Not that I didn't think he could win it,
right?
But give me the guy who's long shot and then let's reassess in July.
Give me your DFS thoughts for the day, because we do have full baseball today.
We do have full baseball and we have Colorado. So you can get Colorado and Arizona. An interesting pivot would be to use Gallen out there, though. Obviously, this Rockies offense is not particularly scary. So I am kind of intrigued by that notion. Can't go with Blake Snell today. I'm excited to see him pitch, but he's the top price out there. I think that's a little bit too nerve-wracking. If you're looking for a cheap pitcher, former Tiger Spencer Turnbull looked really good in his debut against Cincinnati. I like him at St. Louis there. He's 6,900 at DraftKings. I think he's pretty interesting. And this guy's coming off one of the worst outings, and he gets the Dodgers. But if you want to go crazy pivot and just go off the board with like a 1% shot, Bailey Ober against the Dodgers. I'm still fully in on him, even after the disaster against KC.
All right. Now, how about the Johnny Vandermeer flirtation yesterday?
Close.
Ooh, 5 Ronel Blanco, after a no-hitter, goes 5 2/3 scoreless before giving up the only hit he gave up yesterday. That was pretty amazing. Paul, thank you. Appreciate it, man.
Thanks. Take care.
We're in the cap of the 8-2 Pittsburgh Pirates. 8-2 out of the gate. We'll come back. Some hockey with Jay Kahn next.
The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game at Visa, the sports betting network. Visa.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. It's all from Bar Canada, the D, lovely downtown Las Vegas. Gil Alexander, Kelly Midland.
Yo.
Still to come this hour, Mike Somich, College Hoops, from The Handle, which he co-hosts with someone named Matt Brown.
Kelly, that's right.
Do that later. Some more Masters thoughts coming up as well. And Dr. Bob standing by. We get tweets at Beating the Book, though. Best listeners in the game. Bainbridge DeWeese, talking about Paul Sporer's spot. Why would moving the mound back reduce velocity? I did notice that Paul threw that in there. I'm like, I care to explain.
Well, it's further back.
Yeah, but why would that reduce velocity? It would reduce velocity once it got to the batter, but that doesn't reduce velocity in the arm.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, we were talking. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. We were just talking about arm injuries there. Yeah, you're right. So what would change?
Chris Hartman. Gil, perhaps Strider learning a curveball over the winter led to his elbow giving out, not because he wasn't given an extra 4 seconds between pitches. Mr. Postman 619. I'm old enough to have seen Tommy John pitch in person and remember what a big deal it was after he came back from the surgery. I seem to remember that as well. Mike Alvarez. Rick Reuschel had tremendous thighs and was never hurt. Buddhist man, there's nothing I hate more than leaving the office at the end of my workday in the dark during the winter months. Why would I celebrate this during my lunch break? That's an excellent point as well.
See?
James Sott. Oh, this is a great one. I didn't even consider this. We are super excited here in Cleveland for the eclipse. It starts here at 2 to full eclipse at 3:14 Central. Side note, leave it to the Guardians to have their home opener at 5 p.m. Two, shaking my head, Eclipse just popped up, I'm sure, MLB scheduling. It's a little jumbled with the words, but what he's saying is, so, by the way, for those, for those of us who have the Cleveland Guardians bet, so I have Cleveland Guardians, most wins March and April.
Right.
Right now, they're like in fourth place. They're one win behind the top three teams. Pirates, Yankees, Dodgers all have 8 wins. Dodgers have 4 losses, though. And Cleveland has 7-2. But yesterday they had a rainout in Minnesota, and that's not getting made up till August. So we lose that opportunity to get a win, which is bad.
Yeah, that's
right.
Brutal.
But part of the calculus and part of the handicap when I was talking about this when I first made the bet was, okay, but they don't get a home game in Cleveland till April 8th, which is I'm trying to avoid as much inclement weather. Cleveland very capable of having inclement weather this time of year as possible. So April 8th begins the day. So no inclement weather. It's beautiful day to day in Cleveland, but apparently there's a solar eclipse they didn't factor in. So what happens? They can stop the game in the middle? Like what's
So you know how like you can lose a ball in the sun, right? You know, like what happens with that today? You know, like I thought you weren't supposed to look at the eclipse.
David Shalafour, new podcast for Kelly Bidlin. It's called Eclipse Shots.
Yeah, we're doing that right now, apparently.
And Rick Olier. Hey guys, I've been staring at the sun for the last 25 minutes. When is this eclipse supposed to happen?
Keep staring. You'll see something
It'll get there eventually. Just keep looking up. I'm told nothing could happen. That's bad. Dr. Bob joins us courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. His name is Bob Stoll, not actually a physician, but a doctor nonetheless. You can follow him on Twitter at drbobsports, drbobsports.com. He has 2 kids, and we broached this subject right before you came on air. They're very excited for the solar eclipse today, right?
Yeah. Kathy's like, am I going to see it? I'm like, I assume your teachers will take you outside. And they did that when I was in school back when. So I assume so.
You sound like a very...
But if they don't, then I'm going to hear about it when she gets home.
You're very engaged on the subject, Bob, with your daughter. That's to tell her not to look straight at it and not to look unless they give her the glasses.
Yeah, I said they make sure you have glasses.
That's right. Okay. You came on Friday and you talked, you didn't have much of a thought on Purdue, NC State, but you did on Alabama, UConn, and your numbers back UConn against the spread. And then I asked the question, I was like, but if I come to you from the future and I say one of these underdogs, either NC State or Alabama, won it outright, you agreed that Alabama had the makeup to do that. And I kind of think it played out exactly that way, didn't it?
Now I said, if they shoot 43s and make half of them, then they've got a chance. And they shot 48% threes. I'm like, I'm watching this game. I've got, UConn minus, double digits. I'm like, it's close. I'm like, they're shooting 65% threes. Like, when is this going to stop? I mean, if they just shoot 40% threes the rest of the game, UConn's going to win by double digits. It's just a matter of time. But they just kept making them and making them. I'm like pulling my hair out going, you got to be kidding me. And UConn should have been up by 15, and they were only up by 4 or 5 at one point. But eventually it worked out. They only shot 48%, and they needed to shoot 51% to cover the spread. So,
yeah,
it worked out for me.
Yeah, and I made the comment about 85 Villanova. I'm like, okay, they got to do 85 Villanova against Georgetown, but they got to do it from three. And in the first half, they did, Bob. They were 8 of 11,
yeah,
and they were still down 4. It's incredible, man.
Yeah, I felt pretty good when they were down by 4 and they had made 73% of their three-point shots. I thought, well, that's pretty good.
Yep.
We'll be all right.
And I felt the exact opposite with that with Bama Futures. I knew exactly the writing was on the wall. Okay, tonight, national championship. UConn favored by 7 now against Purdue. Where do your numbers fall on this?
Yeah, it's an interesting game because if you look at KenPom or Torvik or any other rating system that uses every game for the entire season, it's going to come out around 3. And if I use every single game equally over the course of the season, I come up with 2.5. So it's not, and people are like, well, the line 6.5, line 7, like this doesn't make sense. I go, it does make sense. And the fact that Donovan Klingon missed 5 games, and then he came off the bench for another 2 when he came back from injury. And Stephon Castle, who's been fantastic, he missed 6 games and also didn't start early in the season. They had Ball was starting early in the season, and he's been terrible. He's the worst guy in the rotation, actually. So if you only look at the games, also Connecticut played relatively better against better teams, which is part of my tournament ratings. So if you only look at the games when Klingon and Castle both played, they're 26-2 straight up, and 26-2 straight up, and 22-6 against the spread when Klingon and Castle are both playing. And if you only look at those that set of games against quality teams, like throwing out all the, you know, below average teams on the schedule, and only look at Purdue's games against quality teams, then I get a fair line of 7.2 points. I mean, it's a huge difference. Plus, the Huskies have the statistical characteristics of a team that historically would outperform in the tournament. And that's been part of, you know, me backing them a lot in this tournament. That's worth another, you know, half a point or so. So I think the fair line should be 7.5. If you use tournament games only, I would come up with UConn by 8. So I think 7.5 is the fair line. I don't think there's enough value to bet it. But, you know, Connecticut just beat the number 4 seeded team by 14 points. And we mentioned made 48% of their threes. The game before that, the Huskies only made 3 of 17 of their own three-point shots and beat Illinois by 25 points. I mean, they are crushing teams even with negative three-point variance. And plus, they got Klingon, who's one guy who can challenge Zach Edey. So when Klingon's out, he doesn't play a lot of minutes necessarily. He'll play, you know, 25 minutes or so. When he's out, then Edey, you know, he'll have to do his damage then. But I think overall, just Connecticut's just a better team in every single way except for Zach Edey when Klingon's out. So I do think 7.5 is probably the fair line. I'm not betting the game, but if I had to bet it, I'd rather have Connecticut.
Where does this Connecticut team, not to put you on the spot here, Bob, Dr. Bob coming to us courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line, but if your historical numbers, does this UConn team rank highly when comparing it to history's greatest teams?
Yeah, it does. And, you know, there's a couple things going on there. If you look at how much better they are than an average team, first of all, this season, and you know, I probably mentioned it before on the show, there's more variance between the average team and the good teams or bad teams this season than in any other season ever. And that's because all the star players from mid-majors are getting poached. And so mid-major schools are getting worse every year, and the major conference teams are getting better every year. And this year it really showed up where the variance between the good and the bad teams is bigger than it's ever been. So just from that standpoint, the better teams are going to be a lot better than average, more than a normal season. But this team, you know, there was a Baylor team, you know, I don't know, 5-6 years ago that was really good. Kentucky, when they were undefeated on the year, but they didn't win. I don't think Baylor or Kentucky, neither team won, but going into the tournament, those were like dominant teams.
Interesting.
That Kentucky team, I forgot who they lost to, maybe Wisconsin. But they, you know, the dominant teams, I was looking back at the most dominant teams heading into the tournament in recent years, in the last 10 or 12 years, neither one won the tournament. So that does not bode well for Connecticut necessarily, but they're up there. I mean, this team at full strength is really, really amazing.
Yeah, this is my Dr. Bob homework or something, because I do this with Aaron Schatz. Aaron Schatz goes all the way back play-by-play to like 1981, and he can tell you like the best teams he has rated over time. I'd be curious what your top college basketball teams were over time. That'd be an interesting.
Yeah, I'd have to look it up. Yeah, but this team there's just no weakness.
Yeah. No, clearly.
That's the thing. There's no weakness.
All right.
They're really great.
Last minute, I'll just ask this for those who have Purdue futures, for those who are betting Purdue against the number tonight. What's the path for Purdue to win this outright tonight? What will have to happen?
Well, it's similar. I mean, they're a great three-point shooting team, and they've got them, but they don't shoot threes in volume, but you know, here's the thing. When Klingon's in the game, they don't necessarily need to double Zach Edey. And a lot of those open threes come from him being doubled. So when Klingon's out of the game, they have got to either attack down low or if they double team Edey in the post, they've got to make those three-point shots. Connecticut has had some bad three-point shooting games in the tournament. In fact, I think they're only shooting 31% from three-point range in the tournament. They've really struggled from beyond the arc in the tournament. So they need to shoot poorly from three. And Purdue needs to make the threes and make more of them. They need to be a higher volume shooting three-point team to have a chance, I think.
All right. The great Dr. Bob Stoll, drbobsports.com and drbobsports on Twitter. Bob, we may not talk to you again until football, before the football season, but I'm sure I'll talk to you in person before that. Appreciate all the time.
Yeah, so I'm going to try to come out and visit you, Gil.
Yes, sir. A little Dr. Bob appearance in the desert. Looking forward to that. Thank you, Bob.
All right.
Dr. Bob Stoll. Oh, he was quick to leave there. It's like the Fortinbaugh dial tone.
He's throwing a party now.
Remember how quickly Ford Ball would like dial tone?
It's like the three-man Weavers. They're like, no more Angie!
Some Masters on the other side with Kelly next.
Numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. Download the app and use promo code VSiN when you sign up. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. Skill Alexander, we get tweets at Beating the Book. MTW, 24 golfer, he says, how is the Purdue team total under 69 not a great bet? Alabama only reached 72, shooting lights out, and Purdue only scored 62 on NC State. The Auburnist. Haven't checked my calendar, but it would be great to have an eclipse in Vegas at the same time as the F1 race, it sounds like. Mike Rouse. Will your sushi place be involved in the Samo Bomb wager? Oh, he didn't ask for the sushi place. That was a big error on Mike Samich's part. Samo Bomb coming right.
Yeah, I kind of feel like if you lose any dinner bet, though, you should have to take the person there.
I don't think so. I disagree. Joe Shad, UConn and Purdue tip off at 9:20 p.m. Eastern Monday night, as we've talked about. He goes, this is later than the college football playoff championship game, the NBA finals, the NHL finals, World Series, and Super Bowl. Why does it start at 9:20 p.m. Eastern Monday night? People are frustrated.
I mean, to be fair, it does run way shorter, though, than a college football national championship.
That it do. That it do.
I don't know why I'm defending the start time.
I don't know why you are either. Scott Gordon, I love this. Bucks are so bad right now that had you put $100 money line against the Bucks starting last Tuesday with their current 4-game losing streak on a rollover, that $100 turns into $102,000. Can you check on the math on that, Kelly? I don't think that's correct. And then Buddhist Man, who's always like consistently funny, he had this tweet where he says, we have to refer to Glen Doc Rivers as Glendejo Rios from now on until they do anything, until the Bucks do anything. Mike Samich, co-host of The Handle, kind enough to join us for a second segment. You can follow him on Twitter, by the way, at SamoBomb18. SamoBomb.
Wait, I love it.
Every time that happens, you got to go SamoBomb.
We should do the sushi place, and if I lose, I'll take you to Golden Steer. I haven't been to Golden Steer in a while. I need to get back there as well.
Mike, there is no Golden Steer for sushi place trade. I'm sorry.
Come on.
Now you've lost your mind. Okay.
But what level do we need to get for sushi place trade off here?
I don't know. I'll have to do some thinking, but it ain't the Golden Steer, I'll tell you that much.
Oh, okay. All right. By the way, we'll figure it out.
We talked about this off air. I will concede on the 5.5 that the under will have heavy juice just based on the fact that the Celtics regular season record is such that, again, if they win out, it's tied for the 15th best record of all time.
Yes.
That just based on those number of losses, right, which is what, 16 total losses thus far with 4 games left? That to get to 6 losses in the postseason has to be the underdog, right? So the under would be juiced. I would agree with you that. But I don't think you can move that number. I don't think you can move it to 4.5. I don't. 5, maybe. But 4.5, I don't think you can.
It'll be interesting, Gil. I'm looking forward to it. I'm excited to just sweep through the first 2 rounds. We can have a little fun here.
I'm glad you guys got a side bet going. Because I actually wouldn't want any part of this number. I actually think you set a pretty good number.
A good number.
Yeah. I would not bet it.
Yeah. I like your number better. I can hear Chrissy saying it in my ear right now. All right, Major League Baseball, full day of Major League Baseball. And again, I just want to say this for folks who bet all kinds of things. There is a beauty about having baseball bets where, because it lives with you every day, you end up, and I'm talking about my March, April, Cleveland Guardians most wins bet. Every day, the single most important to me betting, and I don't have any tennis bets today in Monte Carlo, so that's off the table, but the single most important bet to me, no matter what else I'm betting, is this Guardians bet, because I am not only rooting for them every day, but I am actively rooting against all the teams that I'm competing with right now, Pirates, Yankees, and Dodgers being the three foremost teams in that category. But this applies to Cy Young, right? It applies to everything where you can live with it all the time. You have thoughts on a trio of games today. Let's start with the Mariners and the Blue Jays. Where do you land here?
Yeah, Mariners, Blue Jays here. I'm going the under in the first five. You get under four first five. These are two offenses that really haven't gotten it going. Bichette and Guerrero both really struggling for the Blue Jays. Seattle not exactly hammering the baseball right now. And I like the pitching matchup here. You got Berrios on the hill for Toronto, Castillo on the hill for Seattle. I think both of these pitchers able to control these lineups, especially early. We talked about first five bets last week. I'm a big first five bettor. I want the least number of variables possible in baseball. I'm handicapping the starting pitcher, so I want to handicap the innings that they're actually going to be pitching here. So we'll go under first five, Seattle, Toronto. That's sitting at four right now, Gil. So we'll take the under there.
All right. We don't have under four on the screen, but that's what he's betting there. Seattle, Toronto, first five, under four, given the starting pitching matchup. Tampa Bay Rays, who have been somewhat disappointing for some folks who liked him, but it's still way early. Tampa Bay Rays going to Anaheim, take on the Angels. That is a night game. Rays are favored by -145. What is your angle here?
I like the Rays, and again, I like the pitching matchup here. Anderson on the mound for the Angels. He pitched well in his first start, taking on Eflin, who's 1-1 on the season. I like Eflin more than I like Anderson. I think he's able to shut down a much weaker A's lineup here. You're right, the Rays have not started out hot. They're 5-5 right now, but they are a team that I believe in long-term. I think the offense gets it going. I'm looking to fade this Angels team. I'm surprised they're 5-4 right now. I'm going to try and take advantage of what I think is a little inflated number on them. We'll go Rays first five, lay the half run. You get that -105 right now. So we'll take a little Rays action here in the late game. We got one other first five for you as well here. In this one, I want to find ways to play against the Rockies. This pitching staff is absolutely atrocious. Tonight you've got Freeland on the mound, and you've got a team in the Diamondbacks, so I think you're going to be able to hit the baseball consistently all year. I wanted to find a way to play the team totals, but the team total for the Diamondbacks in this spot is 6.5. That's a little bit high for me. So I played the Diamondbacks first five. Again, laid that half run. You can get the -120 right now on DraftKings. So like the Diamondbacks, like the Rays here, first five minus the half runs.
All right, let's do another. Let's see if Samich and I can come up with another bet here. Rockies, Athletics, White Sox. Bad, bad, and bad. If I said all three teams under 55 games each, what odds would you give me on that? Under 55 wins.
It's for me. The question is, who can get over it? I think the Rockies are atrocious. I don't think they get over 55. This A's team is pretty bad as well, and there's no real help on the pitching side. The division is not very easy too. It would be the White Sox would be the one that I'd be worried about getting over 55 here. I would probably say it's. Any of them get hot. So I would probably say plus or -120 to the over, plus or even money to the under on one of the three getting over 55.
I think I'd want a little more on the under there, but okay. We're throwing it against the wall. See if we can find a bet there.
I mean, 55 is a good number, Gil. Yeah, it's a good number.
It's 55. We always say this about baseball, right? Like even with the, you know, ever increasing chasm between the haves and the have nots, you have some baseball teams. My God, are they bad? And I actually think the Rockies are the worst. I agree with you. Like I think they're in terms of roster construction, as bad as the A's are, the Rockies are just an abomination. And I can't imagine, like, if you play for that team, by mid-June, it's over. Like, it's you got three-plus months of just, okay, well, guess we're going to the ballpark today. But, man, usually we say no matter how bad teams are, they figure out a way to get to 60, right? Like, that's how it always has been. But I do think that number has had to tick down here. And 55 might not be enough of a tick down, you know, like they're so bad. And it is interesting how often I there's no way to know this, but I'm curious how quickly bettors, if they already haven't, if they already hadn't already, we're not even in mid-April. And I wonder how many money line parlays against these teams already exist out there just as an auto bet. Now the A's actually came to play this weekend. So, you know, people would have gotten torpedoed by that, and I don't recommend it. But, I mean, would you agree with that we are getting to the point now where that 60, that old adage of, well, teams figure out a way to get to 60, very quickly is dropping to a point where it might even be 50 here pretty soon.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I definitely agree with that. We've seen that, like, the best teams, it feels like we're getting more top heavy and the worst teams are just getting worse and worse. We saw the Royals last year win 56. The A's won 50 last year. The Rockies got to 59. This is a worse version of the Rockies, and they got to 59 last year. So I would be surprised if they were able to get to that 60 number. I think the A's are frisky this year. They have at least some talent on the offensive side. They've got Sears as a decent pitcher. He's someone I like to bet on when he's pitching on the mound for the A's. The White Sox and the Rockies are absolutely atrocious. I've been looking around to see what I can get for Rockies' worst record. They're in a stacked division, and their starters 1 through 5 are basically a AAA starting rotation. I mean, they're going to get pounded every time they play division foes, and they're in cores too, and they can't take advantage of it from an offensive perspective. This isn't even like a frisky Rockies offense. They are a very, very bad baseball team.
Yeah. All right. You had a lot of bets. Let's review them. So Mike did have UConn, but he got him at a number that doesn't exist anymore at 5.5. He still likes the under though. Golf, Masters, Koepka 18-1 outright, top 5 plus 360, like Zalatoris, top 5 as well. Nice number plus 650, likes the Penguins tonight in hockey, and then the 3 baseball bets. The Rays, -0.5 run, first 5. D-backs, first 5, -0.5 against the Rockies, and then Seattle, Toronto, the first 5 under 4. Sam Obama 18, co-host of The Handle, weekends here at 12 noon with our buddy Matt Brown. Thank you, Mike. Great talking to you.
Good to talk to you guys. Can't wait for my dinner, Gil.
We shall see, sir. We've done all we can do. Gojo and Golic are next. Enjoy.